listening to The Deep End. I'm your host, Mark Kleinschmidt. And this week and every week, we use this opportunity to explore some issues that are in the minds of people here in Chapel Hill and Carrboro and Orange County. And this is a special week, particularly for people who are part of my small community, the LGBT community, the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer community. It's a special week because this week marks our annual NC Pride Festival. This year it's being held on September 24th. Maybe it's happening right now. And if you're listening to this show on the 24th, get yourself to Durham and to Duke's campus or to 9th Street and watch this what will be and I'm sure is a fantastic parade. But I thought it would be great to celebrate NC Pride by bringing together some of my buddies here in our local community who have had significant roles in helping advance the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer community and the issues that are of concern to us. You know, and as I was preparing for this conversation, I stopped for a moment and I thought back over the last decade. You know, when I think about my role in the LGBT community, I remember a time when there was only one person in North Carolina who was in elected office who happened to be a member of the community. I remember a time when people who were LGBT identified were actually, if they confessed that truth about themselves, were confessing to being Class I felons in this state. It wasn't that long ago. It was the world I grew up in. It was the world that I went to college in. It was the world I got elected to public office in. And so much has changed. Today, sodomy laws have been reversed by the United States Supreme Court. We have marriage equality, as everyone knows. We have the ability to serve our country in the military. We have tackled HIV and AIDS to a degree where it's at least a treatable condition where people are living long lives. And these facts have completely changed the LGBT community. And I'm sitting here today with three other people who've had a significant role in making that change happen. And they happen to be great friends of mine. First, I have Lydia Lavelle, who currently serves as the mayor of the great town of Carrboro. Hey, Lydia.
Hi, Mark. Thanks for having me.
I'm so glad you're here. We had a great few years serving together in that mayoral role, and I've been just a grateful firsthand observer of all the great work you've been doing.
Well, we both have done a lot, and we both have a lot to do, and I think we'll talk about that today.
Oh, yeah. There's still a lot to do. Serving with Lydia on the Carrboro Alderman is my friend Damon. Damon Siles, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Mark. Thanks for having me.
You bring in smiles, as Mark Dorison would say?
I always bring the smiles.
And also with me is a gentleman that I got to know when he was in college, who was one of the most one of the smartest young and ambitious people I had met as a college student, who one day told me that he wanted to use the gifts that he'd been given and serve his community. And at the time, I was a little skeptical. I was like, oh, okay, here's another one of these young upstarts. And he did it. And it, obviously, not to the surprise of anyone else, and he has. We are so grateful not only for the work he's done here in Chapel Hill, but is now doing for everyone here in North Carolina. Lee Storah, welcome to the show.
Hey, Mark. Thanks for having me.
I'm so glad to have you. Well, as I mentioned at the beginning, we've come a long way as a community, right? When I think back about being a teacher, for example. I mean, I remember being terrified about being found out. I don't think a lot of people know that when I was a high school teacher, I was closeted and just so frightened. And I had actually heard that if my principal had known that I was a gay man, that I would have been fired on the spot. And is that an experience that you've had or Lydia, we're around the same age.
Right. Yeah. No, I can very vividly remember as a child and then a teenager and then even in college thinking if I ever went on to law school and became a lawyer, I could never be a judge. That's where I went with it. You know, I thought I could never be a judge. Never thought about elected office. But something in me kind of told me I can't really be wholly myself and also do what I want to do with my career. And, you know, that was a looking back, I mean, that's a real sad time, right? But then I was fortunate to have my first job post-graduate school in the city of Durham. And so that was during the times when, you know, Mayor Gulley was there, and yeah. then they had our own parades and different support of the LGBT community. And so it's really nice to see how my adult life is really tracked with the gains we've made with the LGBTQ movement.
You know, and sometimes I think about our lives, Lydia, and the times that we grew up in, and I think about Lee.
Mm-hmm.
Lee, I mean, you're a lot younger than us. There you go, Dan. You're somewhat younger than us. And what I just described and what Lydia's described has to have been different for you.
I mean, Mark and I have had this conversation in the context of my, running for town council in 2011. You know, I ran for town council after Joe Herzenberg ran for town council and got elected, and after Mark ran for town council and got elected. And the conversation that we tried to have as a candidate, I think, looked very different than what had happened before me. And the fact that there were trailblazers who had already won, that there was an openly gay mayor serving in office, meant that we had a very different conversation, I think, about what it meant to be an openly gay candidate running as opposed to what you would have had a decade or several decades ago.
Yeah. And your experience just as a young person, mm-hmm. I would imagine. I mean, when you think about the opportunities you have in front of you, I would hope that the work that those who came ahead of you had done kind of pulled the curtain yeah. back and allowed you to have every opportunity that you could ever dream of.
Well, and I think I'm very lucky to live in a community like Chapel Hill and have done work and progressive spaces in North Carolina that mean that this conversation y'all started to have just a second ago about employment non-discrimination, in many ways, I feel like is unlikely to apply for me. I don't ever anticipate being in a position where my gay status is going to prohibit me from getting a job. At the same time, of course, I do think it's important to note that not everybody lives in a space or works in a space where they're afforded those kind of protections, which is a reminder about why we do still have a lot of battles to go in terms of the public policy process. You know, if you work in the service industry or in a rural community in North Carolina, it is very likely that what you described, Mark, might still be a reality for an LGBTQ-identified person in our state.
Yeah. Damon?
Yeah, I agree. I think I would even go so far as to say that probably for most people in North Carolina, it is still the case that LGBTQ people are living in large part in fear, just as many of us were when we were coming up. I think most of us grew up in areas where, I grew up in Texas, which, like North Carolina, is a relatively conservative state, but happened to be in a place that was like Chapel Hill and Carrboro, more progressive than the rest of the state.
Well, we're up against a break, but when we come back, let's talk about what those other challenges are. Lydia mentioned the work that we still have to do. Let's dive into that deep end on those future issues right after this. And we're back on the deep end. I'm your host, Mark Kleinschmidt. You're listening to 97.9 FM and 1360 AM WCHL. Just before the break, Damon, you and I were talking about some of the challenges that people in the LGBTQ community still have, notwithstanding Don't Ask, Don't Tell, marriage equality, and all the other successes that we've had over the last 10 years. What does the community face today? What are those continuing obstacles towards really full inclusion?
I think they're not unlike the obstacles that we were talking about experiencing years ago in our own community here in Chapel Hill and Carrboro. Like many conservative states, the progress we make in our communities doesn't necessarily reach beyond our small communities. And I think many of us, I've had the privilege in my professional career of working in academia, which is largely a progressive space. And again, like Lee, haven't had the experience of or the fear of having employment non-discrimination experiences in my life. So I think that is not the reality for most people in North Carolina and most people in the country outside of large urban areas or other progressive communities. And so I think the challenges are the same as they have always been. We just are in a space now where we get to pretend sometimes they don't exist for us.
Yeah, when you think at least the members of our community would be free from, lawmakers using us as tools to their own, to advance their own political needs. But we're seeing that every day, right, Lydia? I mean, I'm sure as a mayor, you're still going to the legislature and having to educate educate folks about these issues every day.
Yeah, as with every kind of civil rights movement, it's two steps forward, one step back, right? So we all know that even with marriage equality 2 years ago, now we're seeing a backlash through all the states with religious freedom laws and with bills such as the Magistrate Recusal Act that we have now in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. And we've all heard the maxim, you know, married on Saturday, fired on Monday, mm-hmm. because now that marriage equality has come to the United States, that's a way of outing yourself in a way that, you know, you feel like you should be able to freely out yourself. You know, yeah. The United States Supreme Court has said you can get married, enjoy all the benefits of marriage, but you might work somewhere where an employer finds that disagreeable, or where someone doesn't want to, you know, serve you food or rent you a room or bake you a cake. And so those kind of challenges continue.
Yeah.
I think it's also important for us to acknowledge that a lot of those challenges we're talking about are also still present in Chapel Hill and Carrboro for young people, kids in school, especially dealing with bullying and other issues that gay kids have been dealing with for all the time. You know, this coming up in November will be the second annual LGBTQ education conference. It will be here in Chapel Hill. The first annual conference was held last year. It was a great turnout, and I think one of the most profound experiences of that conference, and Lydia was there for some of it, was hearing from students in our local high schools in the Chapel Hill Carrboro School District talking about their experiences with bullying and harassment in the schools and the inadequate responses of administrators and teachers to those experiences. And so this is not something that's alien to our own community either.
Yeah, I can't imagine for young people here in Chapel Hill and Carrboro, which has always been the beacon of inclusivity, at least that's what I had, how I had perceived it when I was growing up. I can't imagine what it'd be like for kids all around the state. I mean, Lee, you grew up in Asheville, also, I guess, identified as a kind of a liberal haven, but it was kind of surrounded by a lot of conservatism, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think the challenges our young people faced, if you look at the people who we often consider left behind in the LGBTQ movement, you know, I think you can point to the same people who are left behind in almost all movements. Young people, people in rural communities, individuals of color. Obviously, the trans community has faced bullying against their entire community by policymakers right now. Young people, I think, face our biggest burden. And when we look at some of the health impacts, when we look at suicide rates and suicide attempts, I think it's really sorrowing to realize the challenges that we still face.
Yeah, and you know, I feel fortunate as a member of the larger LGBT community, I feel like a privilege of being one of the G's in the LGBTQ spectrum. And you know, I think back 20 years ago when Ellen came out, and when Will and Grace was on, and how liberating it was to see people like me in entertainment. And now I think about the people in the trans community, where when you see folks like Caitlyn Jenner or Laverne Cox, who are now, you know, Laverne Cox just, you know, gave out an Emmy Award last night, and there was a great call for entertainment venues to tap into the talent of trans folk. But just because that visibility exists, it's certainly not, it doesn't protect anyone from oppression. And HB2, of course, and we haven't mentioned it yet. We've gone halfway through the show. We haven't mentioned it yet. It's one of the best examples, right, Lydia?
It is. And, you know, so what's happening now with HB2, and, you know, it can change every day, right? So we know that this may air at a time when it's even more different, when it's even changed again. But one thing about HB2 is you hear people now who are trying to step back from it, that supported it, and they're really trying to kind of break apart our community. Because I think, you know, one of the solutions I think we're going to see come from some members of the legislature is, well, let's repeal part of it, but not all of it. And mm-hmm. it's really important that our entire community stays together on this issue. You know, it's the same kind of issues of, you know, being able to affirm one's gender identity are just as important for people who are gay as for people who are trans. And those that would want to divide those issues, you know, that's not acceptable.
Right. And, you know, Lee, I would imagine that for young people in particular, and, you know, maybe I'm assuming you know more about the experience of the young people than I do. Surely you're closer in age to them. But I would imagine that it's an even more important issue to them, that they really see that as the issue of the day.
Yeah. And what I think is really exciting that I see happening in our younger generation is a willingness to push the envelope even further than we've seen in the past. So we are having a conversation about gender identity and what that means. And I think that's really being driven and led by young activists in North Carolina. These gender identity challenges are complicated. And I think it's a new territory for a lot of folks who've been doing this work for a long time. So we recently held a conference, and at that conference, it was really important that we try to ask folks to define what are my preferred gender pronouns. Do I prefer he, him, and his, she, or, you know, we had conference participants who were refusing to accept that gender binary and wanted to be in a space that had gender-neutral bathrooms that allowed them to be true to who they were. And I think that that's really threatening to the patriarchy, and it's really threatening to some conservative policymakers. But I'm excited to see us continue to sort of push the ball and push that envelope forward.
Well, I wonder if those of us who are part of an older generation of LGBT people actually have the capacity to do this well. You know, I mean, even in my experience, you know, coming up, I remember there being a lot of division between the LGB and the T community. And I'm not sure that people of my generation actually have the capacity. And I think a lot of it goes back to the struggles of the 80s, 70s and 80s, particularly around HIV and all the folks who were lost in that crisis. And when we come back from the break, let's talk a little bit about maybe how that historical context might inform the skill set that we have as a community. So we'll be right back after these messages. Hi, and welcome back to The Deep End. You're listening to 97.9 and 1360 WCHL. I'm your host, Mark Kleinschmidt. This is The Deep End. And just before the break, we were talking about some of the differences between the generational experience among members of the LGBT community. And one of the things that I often talk to young people about is the experience of particularly the gay male community in the 80s when so many of its members were dying. And I often talk to young people and I say, you know, there aren't that many gay men who are 10 years older than I am because they died during the worst of the AIDS crisis. And often that can be kind of jarring, and it seems to create some tension between segments of the community. Have you seen that, Damon? Or
I have, but I think I also hold that reality against another reality, which is something that Lee hinted at before, which was that a lot of the really interesting activism and advocacy work going on in the community now is really by young people, especially young queer people of color, who are doing a lot of really, like Lee said, pushing the envelope. And I think we have a responsibility to make space for that and to be responsive to that instead of trying to drive the agenda. We did some work that's related to what Lee's up to these days in Carrboro by passing a resolution thanking Congressman Price for supporting HIV decriminalization. And that's the kind of work that's going on now that touches not only on LGBTQ experiences in North Carolina, but also on these other identities around rural experience and youth experience, people of color. And I know that Lee has been doing a lot of work around the state and the nation around HIV.
Yeah, what is that work you're doing? I know you've been international now, Lee.
Yeah, so I feel really honored to serve as the executive director of the NC AIDS Action Network, mm-hmm. which is our statewide nonprofit dedicated to policy and advocacy work in HIV treatment and prevention. And I think what I find so exciting and dynamic about HIV advocacy work is we do sit at this intersection of public health, LGBTQ rights, and social justice. You know, the work we're doing in decriminalization really puts us in the middle of broader policing conversations and the disproportionate impact that certain laws have. When we look at HIV rates in our state, you know, the spaces that we have to work in and the spaces that we have to build partnerships and alliances in are communities of color. Young African-American men who are either gay or bisexual identified or are sleeping with men have incredibly disproportionate HIV rates. And we also see this amazingly disproportionate rate amongst the trans community. And so it puts us in a position, I think, to bring together a broad coalition to work on this important public health topic.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we go, Lydia, what are the, you know, you've been around long. What are our next big battles? What are our next big fights? What's the new call to call to people in our community?
Yeah, clearly, HB2, repeal of HB2, some type of understanding of employment discrimination, how religious freedom may or may not impact employment, and looking out for our LGBTQ youth, the bullying that we talked about and other kind of issues. I mean, you know, being a middle school or high school student is hard enough without also trying to deal with the issues that come with figuring out one's identity. And so I think each of us here needs to continue to kind of serve, I think, as a spokesperson for the community so that kids who are in middle school and kids who are in high school can see that, you know, that life goes on.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing all three of you this weekend at Pride. It's a great time annually to stop to celebrate the extraordinary successes that our community has made over the last 10, 15 years. But it's also a sobering time, and a time in which we really need to reflect on the great work that we still have to do. So thank you for listening. This is Mark Kleinschmidt, and you've been listening to Deep End on 97.9 and 1360 WCHO.